Thought Press Network.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hey, Q. It's me, Pen. I just wanted to let you know I'm not going to be able to make it to today's, recording. If you can hear how I sound, it's a pretty bad cold that I have. So, you think you could take care of today's mini episode? I think you're gonna like it. See you soon. Happy holidays.
Welcome to
Morbid Curiosity, a podcast about
life.
Hey everyone, it's Q, and we've got a special mini episode for you guys. You guessed it, this is a holiday special episode. Last year we discussed Christmas and all the weird traditions that happen all over the world for the holidays. This year, we're going to do things a little bit differently.
Grinch, you really are a heel.
Holidays are great and not so great at the same time.
You're as cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch.
It's an extremely stressful season between trying to make sure you got the right gift, making sure you have your finances in order, having to deal with traffic, stores, having to deal, of course, with your family.
You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch.
And for me, it's stressful. Always filled with questions. What am I doing? What am I going to do? When am I going to have kids? Questions that I don't really care to answer. But I love my family, and for as dreadful as sometimes it is, and for those moments where I just need to go outside and sip another glass of wine, I'm grateful for them, and I'm grateful for the time that I get to spend with them, and all the wonderful traditions that I have either started myself or have continued on from my parents. But that's not really how it is for everyone. I did some research, and I've got some interesting stories to tell you guys with regards to murders that happened on December 25th.
You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
The first story is about the Andersons. On December 24th,
December 24th, it's the night before Christmas. And while most people in the small town of Carnation, Washington, are busy hanging their stockings with care, it's a very different scene at the rural home of beloved locals.
Judy and Wayne Anderson were in their family home in Carnation, Washington, prepping the house for a holiday meal with their family. They had invited their daughter Michelle, her boyfriend Joseph, as well as their son Scott and his wife Erica, their two kids, Olivia and Nathan. Judy had a delicious meal baking in the oven, and she hurried to wrap presents before her grandchildren arrived. Wayne was sitting comfortably by the Christmas tree, watching TV, relaxing a bit before his family arrived. Judy and Wayne were hoping that the holidays would bring some light to their family, as there had been some recent sibling rivalry between Michelle and Scott. Scott was a carpenter who had encountered some financial difficulties over the years and had borrowed thousands of dollars from his parents, of which none had been repaid. Michelle herself had received some help from her parents as they helped pay her rent every month for the trailer she shared with her boyfriend, Joseph. However, Judy and Wayne had recently asked Michelle to start paying her own rent as they were getting older, getting ready for retirement, and could not afford to help her anymore. They had already provided her years of free rent on a trailer that they had on their own property. But this made Michelle feel slighted, as if her parents favored her brother, which, of course, created animosity between the two of them. Nevertheless, it was the holidays, and the Andersons were going to try and make the best of it. And what better way to bring tidings and good cheer than delicious food and presents? At 4 p.m., Michelle and Joseph's pickup truck pulled into the driveway, and they walked into the home. Michelle said hello to her father and made her way to the back room where Judy was busy wrapping Christmas gifts. Michelle then returned to see her father by the TV while her boyfriend Joseph stayed talking to Judy. Michelle then walked up to her father, pulled out her handgun, and pulled the trigger. But it jammed. Michelle screamed for Joseph, who came running and quickly shot her father. After hearing the gunshot, Judy ran out of the back room, screaming, trying to make it to the kitchen to call the police. But before she could make it to the phone, Joseph shot her, knocking her to the ground. He then walked up to where she lay on the floor, whispered sorry, and shot her again in the head. It was then that Michelle and Joseph dragged the bodies out of the house. They placed Judy and Wayne's bodies in the shed and started cleaning the house, removing all evidence that something horrific had just taken place. Then they sat, waiting. Waiting for her brother Scott and his family to arrive at the house. The family of four had no idea what awaited them. Scott and his wife Erica and two children finally arrived, and Michelle was quick to act. As Scott made his way through the living room, Michelle attacked him. They were now in a wrestling match for the gun, but Michelle was able to get herself away just enough to shoot and kill Scott. Erica, scared and screaming, ran to the house phone to dial 911 while Joseph fired a bullet at her. Yet she still managed to get the operator on the phone.
Shortly after 5 p.m., dispatchers at the Kane County Sheriff's Office received this chilling call.
Hello?
A few seconds of what sounds like screaming.
Hello?
And then the phone goes dead.
She can be heard pleading not to kill the kids before Joseph snatches the phone. She cried. You don't have to do this. Then Michelle shot and killed her. As 5-year-old Olivia and 2-year-old Nathan cried, scared of all that was going on, Michelle looked to Joseph and asked him to please kill the children. She didn't want any witnesses. And she also didn't want to scar the kids for life, after having seen their parents be killed and all. So Joseph then shot and killed Olivia and Nathan. Once there was no survivors left, Michelle and Joseph threw their handguns into a river, locked the gate of the driveway, and fled. Police would later arrive at the home following Erica's 911 call, but after seeing the locked gate, decided not to investigate any further. It was not until 2 days later when one of Judy's co-workers came to the house to see why Judy was not at work, that the bodies would be discovered.
December 26th, Thanks to a gut feeling from mail carrier and Judy Anderson's best friend, Linda Teeley, the true nature of the 911 call is revealed.
Christmas Eve, Christmas comes and goes. After the holidays, we all get back to work.
Right.
Take me there.
The last time I had seen Judy was on the 23rd, and we had hugged because we knew that we weren't going to probably cross paths until the day after Christmas. On the 26th, I went to work, probably 7 o'clock when I went into work, and Judy wasn't there yet, which wasn't real strange. But by 7:30, she should have been there. And by about 7:45, there's no doubt in my mind that there is something very, very wrong.
Call it best friend's intuition or something else. But with little more than a hunch to go on, Linda leaves work and races to Judy's house.
So by now I'm crying. I mean, I know there is something wrong, drastically wrong, with my friend.
And soon, it seems her worst fears are confirmed.
The house was unlocked, and Judy always kept her house locked. And so I opened the door a little bit, and I yelled, "Judy, it's Linda." And there's no response. And so I open the door farther and lean in and yell, "Judy, it's Linda. We're worried about you." I look down and I can see a man is laying on the ground.
911?
There's been a murder. There's 3 people dead that I can see right now.
Inside?
I just came up. She works with me.
Inside the house?
Yes.
What do you see?
There's a baby and a man and a woman. And she's my best friend.
Linda continues talking with dispatchers, trying to make sense of the horror.
And this is your best friend?
Well, you know, looking at the person that the woman is dead out there, I'm not sure it's Judy. There's no light in that room.
In fact, when investigators arrive around 9:30 that morning, they find that the adult bodies are actually those of Wayne and Judy's son, Scott, and daughter-in-law, Erica. The baby boy, their 3-year-old son, Nathan, still clutching his mother's chest. Sadly, beneath Erica's body, apparently huddled for safety, they find a 4th victim, 5-year-old daughter, Olivia.
While law enforcement sealed the crime scene, Michelle and Joseph pull up, stating that they had been away trying to elope in Vegas. However, on their way, they had gotten horribly lost and had to turn back. They did not ask why the police were there, and they did not ask whether or not their families were okay. This was an obvious sign that something was wrong. So the police, being suspicious, took them in for questioning. It was while being questioned that Michelle confessed to the murders, stating that she had been planning this for weeks because she was, quote, tired of everyone stepping on her, end quote. She mentioned money at least 35 times during the interrogation. Michelle did, however, advise police that the killings were all her idea, and that she had forced Joseph into it, and she was taking 100% responsibility for the slayings.
It didn't take long for 2 very seasoned homicide investigators to uncover in their conversations with them that they were responsible for the homicides.
That's right. Cops realized the horrific killings of 3 generations of Andersons were carried out by Joe and Michelle. And according to the killers themselves, in hundreds of pages of confessions to police, what really happened is almost too heinous for words.
The clearest information that we received from her in the course of her 3 or 4 hour conversation with the detectives was that she was upset with her brother Scott.
It began on the afternoon of December 24th. Wayne and Judy were preparing a Christmas Eve dinner for Scott, Erica, and the grandkids, who were scheduled to arrive later in the day. Sometime after 4 p.m., Michelle and Joe enter Wayne and Judy's house, armed with a .357 revolver and a 9mm handgun.
By both accounts, Michelle took a shot at her dad in the living room while Joe was keeping her mother occupied so that she wouldn't see it. And it would appear that Michelle missed, and that's when Joseph McEnroe put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. After Wayne Anderson was killed and lied was lying on the floor. They turned the guns on his wife, Judy, and she, by both accounts, she begged them not to do so.
Three more shots, and Judy falls dead. Then, with both Wayne and Judy eliminated, Michelle and Joseph dragged their bodies to a shed out back.
And they had to do that before Scott and Erica arrived at 5 o'clock, which they knew from speaking with Judy the day before.
Lying in wait, cold, calculating.
When Scott and Erica arrived with the two small children at their prearranged 5 o'clock time, they came into the living room, sat down.
And that's when Michelle made her move, shooting her brother multiple times before he even knew what hit him. Then the murderous couple turned their sights on Erica.
At some point while Michelle and Joe McEnroe are shooting Erica, whatever gun is being used is out of ammunition. And during that time that they realize they're out of ammunition, she reaches over the couch and grabs the landline, a cordless phone, and dials 911.
The absolute terror. I mean, she jumped over the damn sofa with three bullets in her and grabbed the phone to call 911.
By the time that the 911 operator responds, Joe McEnroe, by his own admission, takes the handset from her, takes the back off of the phone and removes the batteries and throws it against the wall.
Hello? Hello?
He then, with Erica pleading for her life, fires the two fatal rounds into her, including the one essentially between her eyes, in execution style.
Joe then turns the violence toward the children, fires one shot into young Olivia, then turns the gun on 3-year-old Nathan, still clutching his mother's chest. Why on earth would Michelle want to murder her family? And how could she ever convince her then-boyfriend Joe to carry out the most excruciating part of this grisly plan, to gun down her niece and nephew?
These two were dissatisfied with the fact that Wayne and Judy Anderson seemed to like her brother Scott more than they liked Michelle. And as petty as that may sound, that was the reason why Michelle Anderson told those detectives that she and her boyfriend went up and killed 6 people the day before Christmas.
Joseph and Michelle were charged with 6 counts of first-degree murder, and both faced the death penalty. In January of 2014, Joseph made a full confession in hopes to avoid the death sentence. On March 25th, 2015, a jury found Joseph guilty of aggravated first-degree murder on all 6 counts. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole and was indeed able to avoid the death penalty. On March 4th, 2016, Michelle Anderson was also found guilty of all 6 counts and was sentenced to 6 consecutive life sentences. As true crime fans, I'm sure that at some point in the holidays, either this year or years before, you've probably Googled holiday murders, Christmas Day massacres, or something to that extent. I know I have. It's one of the reasons I'm doing this mini episode. But you can't do that search without the Christmas Day massacre popping up on your feed, or also known as the Lawson family murder. It is one of the most well-known Christmas Day crimes and killings that has ever happened. It is an interesting case, and I'm only mentioning it because I want to play a song for you. And it's a song that was written about the Lawson family murders.
And he had a loving wife. but we'll never know what caused him to take his family's life.
It was Christmas Day, 1929, when Charlie Lawson and his son Arthur were in the back of their house and they were hunting. At some point, they run out of ammunition and Charlie sends his son Arthur, who was 16 at the time, to go and buy some more. However, Arthur wouldn't even have an opportunity to leave the store, which was only 15 minutes away from his house, before word would reach him that something terrible had happened in his home. It seems that Charlie would turn on his entire family and kill every member. Charlie first shot his daughters Carrie and Mabel as they were setting out to leave to their uncle and aunt's house. He basically waited for them by the barn, and once they were in range, he shot them with a 12-gauge shotgun. And then just to be sure that they were dead, he then bludgeoned them to death.
They say he killed his wife at first, and the little ones did cry. Please, Papa, won't you spare our lives, for it is until he killed them all.
He then hid their bodies in the barn. He returned home and he shot Fanny, who was on the porch. And then as soon as the gunshot went off, his daughter Mary, who was inside, started to scream, along with his other two sons, James and Raymond. As they were trying to find a hiding place, Charlie shot Mary, then found the two boys and shot them. He then went to the baby, Mary Lou, and shot and killed her. After he killed every member of his family, with the exception of Arthur, he went into the nearby woods and hid there for several hours and then shot himself. The only survivor would be his son, Arthur. Charlie even killed himself while police were on his property. So that's a very quick summary. You can listen to a lot of different podcasts that have covered it. I know one of my favorite podcasts, Criminal, covered this case, I believe, last year. So make sure you check that out. I did just want to play the song because I find it interesting how there are a lot of songs that are actually based off of horrible events, and this just happens to be one of them.
And when the sad, sad news was heard, it was a great surprise. He killed six children and his wife, and then he closed their eyes. And now farewell, kind friends and home, I'll see you all no more. Into my breast I'll fire one shot, then my troubles will be o'er. They did not carry him to jail, no lawyers did he pay. He'll have his trial in another world on the final judgment day. They all were buried in a crowded grave while the angels watched above. Come home, come home, my little ones, to the land of peace and love.
And last but not least, I want to leave you guys with a little bit of information about Christmas itself. There's this war on Christmas, and I don't want to offend anybody. If any of our listeners are not, do not believe in Christmas, I understand. But I do say happy holidays. I put a tree in my house and the stockings, not by a fire, because we're in Miami, so I can't put my stockings by a fire. But I'm huge, huge into the holidays. It's one of my favorites, if not my absolute favorite holiday of the year. But there seems to always be this war on Christmas and what we should and shouldn't say, what we should and shouldn't do traditionally, depending on your religious background. Christmas didn't always start off as such a festive holiday. I mean, it was kind of always like the focus of drinking and eating just because of what was going on in the world. Like, you would go out publicly and eat and gorge and drink extremely heavily because food and alcohol were plentiful because, you know, it all harvested over the fall and it was early winter and now beer had been brewed and the animals had been slaughtered and everything had been harvested and now there was no farm work to be done. So it was like a time to kick back and relax, but really go crazy. And really, it was like the wealthy people who would have like the biggest feast themselves. And those in the lower social classes ended up having to kind of beg for that stuff. You know, we laugh now with Christmas carolers, and we don't really do that anymore, at least not in Miami. We're not knocking on people's doors and singing. But the history of that isn't this, like, let me bring you good cheer, but rather that the lower workers of the community were basically going to the homes of the wealthy. Yes, singing and trying to bring good cheer, but in the hope of getting gifted food and alcohol. But if you didn't give it to them, then, well, things were not going to be so great.
We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Now bring us a figgy pudding.
Figgy pudding?
It's made with figs.
Oh, sorry.
And bacon.
If they were denied entry or not given gifts for the songs that they were singing to you, they would retaliate.
They
are asking for pudding, and if you don't give them pudding, then we're going to do something back to you. It's rather interesting. I also find it interesting that if I ever come to your house knocking on the door to sing some sort of Christmas carols, I expect food. I expect food and good drink. Because if not, I'm going to knock down your snowman. I have no idea. I know, Penn, you're editing this, so I'm just going to talk to you. I have no concept of how to end this because you're not here. And we're not recording together because you're sick. So talking to myself about Christmas when I'm already super excited about Christmas is actually kind of hard. And it's also hard to talk about Christmas negatively about murder and true crime because I love Christmas. So this is really hard. But basically, this episode was just to give you a little bit of dark in a otherwise bright and shiny holiday and let you know, enjoy the family time. You don't know when you'll have it. And if you don't have family with you this holiday season, do not fret. Message me on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and I will send you some of my holiday cheer because I have more than enough to spare for everyone. I promise you that. Thank you guys for listening to this very short mini episode. I'm going to be giving you more crime fix after the holidays. In the meantime, if you're asking yourself, man, I love this podcast, what could I do to help them, or what can I give them this holiday season? It's easy. I can give you 3 things you can do for us that would be a great help and an amazing gift this holiday. 1, follow us and like us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and join our Facebook discussion page. All you have to do is type in Morbid Curiosity, and you'll be able to find us. 2, you could subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or iHeartRadio or Podomatic or everywhere and leave us a review. Those reviews actually help us get boosted up and get seen by other people who are not listening to us yet. So leave us a 5-star review. Tell us what it is that you love and enjoy about us. And we're going to keep trying to bring you all of that new content in 2018. And lastly, if you're like, that's not enough, I've already liked your pages, I already subscribed, I've already reviewed. Okay, last and final thing, we have a Patreon. And for as little as $1 a month, you can get some amazing perks. And we have a lot of things that we want to bring to you in the next year. So all you have to do is go to www.patreon.com/morbidpod. And like I said, for as little as $1 a month, you're going to be able to get bonus episodes. You're also going to get early access to episodes before they release everywhere else. And you're also going to start getting perks with regards to our blogs, our pictures, our behind-the-scenes videos. And me and Pan are going to actually be planning a live video chat, and you'll be able to be a part of that. So all you have to do, like I said, www.patreon.com/morbidpod. And that's it. Those three things. Until 2018, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting.
Stay morbid. Stay curious.
It was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature or spirit, not even a mouse. Suddenly I heard a strange noise down below. So in my flannel pajamas, I went tippy-toe. I could see our Saint Nick from the spot where I stood, so I slid down the banister just as fast as I could. Christmas is my two front teeth, my two front teeth. See my two front teeth. Gee, if I could only have my two front teeth, then I could wish you Merry Christmas. It seems so long since I could say, Sister Susie sitting on a thistle.